Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right, Orlando Franklin and Tony D in for Stokely and Zach. So yesterday on The Drive, Zach stated that he thinks Elway could be putting his second best year as Broncos GM.
When you actually look at the situation that the Broncos were in, with the money they had to spend, with issues on this football team that they had to address, what is the next level beyond that? Like, that was realistic.
I mean,
I think John Elway has done a great job, and I think I could argue that it may be John Elway's second best 365-day stretch of the position that he's in, considering the class that he brought in this past year, considering the decision to move on from Vance and all that that entailed, Joe Woods, etc., the decision to bring in Vic Fangio and hit the reset button on the offense, bring in Rich Scangarello, and then the moves that he made in free agency. I know John struggled. He struggled in free agency and in the draft leading up to that point for the previous 3-4 years, but that window of time, boy, he got it right.
I agree with this completely. Orlando, you on board?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I love it.
I mean, that's
a bold statement, but a good statement and a right statement.
No question. No question. I want to ask you a couple questions real quick. It plays to the point, right? You just talked about the draft class. You know, the draft class that he brought in, it might be, and then after the free agency. Okay, is Bradley Chubb better than Shaq Barrett and Shane Ray?
Yes.
Okay, is Courtland Sutton better than Demaryius Thomas?
Yeah.
As of right now, where they both sit in age, I mean, is he a better talent?
Yeah.
Is he going to have better production? Yes, right?
Right.
I mean, right there, the draft class is just literally you bring in Philip Lindsay, you bring in all these other guys, Isaac Yiadom, you bring in Josie Jewell, you bring in Deshaun Hamilton. Great draft class, right? So you hit it out the park with the draft class. But then after the season, you make the decision to say, hey, you know what? Vance Joseph is not the guy. We cannot go on with Vance Joseph. And then you get rid of him. And then Gary Kubiak, the question is asked if Gary Kubiak is going to be a part of this team moving forward. And John Elway says immediately, yes. But then John Elway decides to not go that direction. And he goes and gets Rick Scangarello, and Vic Fangio, Mike Munchak, Ed Donatell. You know, he goes get assembles this great coaching staff. But then, which is right there, you know, I would have been just happy with that. You know what? We got a great draft class last year. He decided not to go down the same road and hire a friend and bring back coaches that had been here before. You know, he let this new head coach and Vic Fangio hire his guys. So I was on board right there and then. But then now free agency hits and the Broncos immediately address their needs. You needed cornerbacks because you only had two on the roster and Isaac Yiadom and Chris Harris Jr. You don't know when Isaac Yiadom's going to be available because he just had off-season shoulder surgery. So you go get Bryce Callahan and Kareem Jackson immediately. The right tackle position has been a position that it's like there's been a knife in our side for the last 5 years. Well, you go get Juwan James to figure out that position. And, you know, you went and traded for Joe Flacco after you went to the senior day and you said, hey, you know what? Maybe these quarterbacks might not be the right guy for me moving forward. And I'm in a win now mode. And who gives me the best opportunity to win now because of the back-to-back losing seasons? Well, Joe Flacco gives me a better opportunity to win now than any of these other quarterbacks might give me in this year's draft. So you go get Joe Flacco. So you just keep on winning. John Elway, you know that song, All I Do Is Win, Win, Win. As far as since last year and his draft class to where we are at right now, all John Elway has done with the decisions that he has made after that draft class is win.
Yeah, this is, and you're right about the Flacco situation because you think about where the conventional wisdom was going with everybody, right? They're going to take Drew Lock. They love Drew Lock. They're going to find their quarterback in the draft. Well, then he trades for Joe Flacco knowing that, hey, listen, if I can get an experienced quarterback, a experienced good quarterback to come in here, it's a bold move in a way because, you know, it had its critics, but at least it was stating, hey, wait a minute. I went down and did some research. Maybe the quarterback we need for 2019 isn't down here at the Senior Bowl when all of you think that it is, that he is. That doesn't mean they're not going to take a quarterback in the draft, but it does mean in 2019 that guy ain't starting.
But it also means that, hey, you know what? Because we just saw the reports of Mike Kliss said that, hey, the Broncos are deciding to bring in Dwayne Haskins and Drew Lock. So it says that the Broncos, that those guys might not be ready for 2019. And John Elway has a plan for 2019. You know, if even if you do take a quarterback at 10, I mean, we're all going to be mad and pissed off if he doesn't play right away because you just did that with Paxton Lynch. But, I mean, you're not forced to it now, because if you do take a quarterback at 10, it's not like he's going against a Trevor Siemian and a Trevor Siemian's beating him out. No, he's exactly. Going against a Super Bowl MVP in Joe Flacco. So we'd be more accepting if the Broncos took Drew Lock or Dwayne Haskins at 10 and now they had to sit a year because of that. Because we just saw what happened with we just saw the same situation happen in our division right up the street with Kansas City when they took Patrick Mahomes in the first round. They moved up to get him, and he had to sit behind a quarterback that was a first-round pick in Alex Smith, and then they were able to make the decision in year two, and then Patrick Mahomes went out and did what he did last year.
And think about something that you said, too, which we talked about Mike Munchak, right? The ability to take a guy to interview him for a head coaching position. Munchak could have said, you know, thanks, I'm happy in Pittsburgh with the same job, or there's some other head coaching opportunities I want to go after. I was a head coach before. I think I want to go try that again. He gets Mike Munchak to take the same position in Denver with an offensive line that needs a lot of work.
Yeah.
That's a great coup.
Yeah, and that just adds to his resume. You know, Mike Munchak's going to be able to come in here and tackle something and have the opportunity to, you know, develop a situation that has been in turmoil the last couple of years, and that's the Denver Broncos offensive line. And you don't think the Steelers wanted him to stay? Absolutely. You know what I mean? Mike Munchak literally could have probably got 20 different jobs to be the offensive line coach on 20 different teams in this league right now. Even teams that have their offensive line coach under contract would have welcomed him with open arms. But yet, John Elway was able to go get Mike Munchak and sign him on here. You know, that was huge. I mean, he's been winning since the draft class, since the firing of Vance Joseph, and since the assembling of this coaching staff and not bringing back his guy, and also in free agency. John Elway has had so far a heck of a, I don't know how many days it's been since the last draft, maybe 320 days, but he's been doing awesome.
Register for the Fans 5K Bracket Challenge presented by Breaks Plus. You can compete against us, host your office pool, your chance to win $5,000. Register at 1043thefan.com. That's 1043thefan.com. All right, looking back at the Broncos 2018 draft class, how would we grade that draft? That's coming up next. Orlando Franklin and Tony D in for Stokely and Zach. ESPN Insider revisited the draft class for the Broncos of 2018, gave each team a grade, and then regraded them based on how those class performed. When it came to the Broncos, they originally graded the Broncos draft as a B+. Their new grade for that class is an A-. All right, so here's why. Here's a couple of things that they pointed out. John Elway really needed a strong 2018 draft class after a few down years. Although it wasn't enough to get the Broncos back into the playoffs, it's safe to say Elway hit a home run. The star of the class wasn't even in the class. Undrafted running back Philip Lindsay quickly passed up third-round pick Royce Freeman on a way to a Pro Bowl season, totaling over 12,000 yards from scrimmage with 10 touchdowns. Top pick Bradley Chubb was the number one ranked pass rusher, according to the site. He showed in his rookie season with 12 sacks on the other side of Von Miller. And Chubb is a stud. Broncos also got a promising first season from wideouts Cortland Sutton and Deshaun Hamilton, combined for 72 catches and 6 touchdowns. Sutton figures to be a starter. Orlando, do you agree with this new grade class for the Broncos, according to the ESPN Insider article?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The Broncos had 10 draft picks last year, Tony, and out of the 10, there was 9 rookies that were active at some point this year for the Broncos. And I'm also including the 11th rookie that we all know about, that he wasn't a part of the draft class, but he might be the guy that was, if it's not Bradley Chubb that had the best season out of the rookie class, he might have be arguably the best guy. But I mean, he also went to a Pro Bowl in Philip Lindsay. But I mean, that's good talent when you could bring in 10 guys in the draft and then a total of 11 after you bring in Philip Lindsay from being an undrafted free agent, but 9 of those guys are active at some point this year. That says that you're drafting well.
Yeah.
You're doing the right thing, and you're evaluating these guys really well, because for these guys to be active, it's not enough just to be on the 53-man roster. I mean, you only get 46 spots on game day. So if these for nine of these guys to be active at some point this year and be on that 46-man roster, it says that the Broncos are trending in the right direction with this young rookie class.
All right, so they got playing time as rookies, but now it's coming up into this season. So if you look at this draft class, what do you expect this upcoming year in 2019?
Oh, I'm expecting a huge leap from a guy like Courtland Sutton and Deshaun Hamilton. That when they came in last year, they were the third and fourth wide receiver on this team. Well, now they're going to be the second and third behind Emmanuel Sanders. So they've moved up in the depth chart. So I'm expecting their play on the field to be up a notch from what we saw last year as well. I don't know how much better Phillip Lindsay could get, to be honest with you. I feel like if he's just able to sustain what he was able to sustain last year, we're going to be in great shape with that. A guy like Phillip Lindsay. I look at a guy like Sam Jones. Is he going to get on the field? What's the situation there? Are we going to look at him at the center position because Connor McGovern struggled last year? Or we're going to look at him as a true guard because of the fact of Ron Leary with his health issues and not being available during the last 2 years for the Broncos for all 16 games? Or are we going to look at him and say, you know what, let's compete for the right guard spot with a guy like Connor McGovern because last year during the season, Connor McGovern got benched at one point. So what are we going to do with Sam Jones? You know, so I'm expecting to figure that out as soon as OTAs start here in the next couple weeks and see exactly how much he's going to play for this team. And if the Broncos really truly believe that they made the right decision when they went and drafted him, because right now there's holes on this offensive line. And you took Sam Jones last year in the draft in the sixth round. Is he good enough to get on the field after basically redshirting for a year in the NFL and taking the time to learn this scheme and get bigger, faster, and stronger? Now, is he going to be able to come out and be able to compete for one of these positions? So I'm expecting a lot from this class. I'm definitely expecting a lot. I look at last year as a building block, and you know, that's our cornerstone. That's us moving forward. What direction are we going to go into? But these guys all need to be able to take a jump in their second year. But for guys like Phillip Lindsay and Bradley Chubb, I don't know how they do that because they played so phenomenal last year in their first year in the league.
All right, coming up in April with the draft with the 10th pick, best player overall, or there's still needs that they've got to address quickly and get that guy that fills those needs?
You got to address your needs. You can't just go best player overall. You got to go get your needs. And right now, your biggest need on this team is the inside linebacker position. We don't got a guy. We really don't got a guy. Do I like Josie Jewell? Absolutely. Do I think he's going to be a great player in this league? Absolutely. But I look at Josie Jewell and say he's a first and second down linebacker. Todd Davis the exact same way. We got to go get a three down linebacker that can be involved in all the defensive packages when you call everything on the defense, because we just let the guy walk that was doing that for the last couple years with the Broncos and Brandon Marshall.
Because can he replace Marshall? I don't think he can, but do you think he can?
No, not right now. I mean, can he continue to study his playbook and learn this game and get better in coverage? Yes, he can. But if you're walking into the season right now and saying Josie Jewell is going to be my three down linebacker for all 16 games, it's going to be a big drop. And right now, the Broncos have struggled for the last couple years at covering the tight end, you're going to have the same exact issue with a guy like Josie Jewell and also covering the running backs out the backfield as well.
There's an interesting line in this article, too. It comes at the end where he says, overall, this is a great class, talking about last year's class. And if Flacco is competent in 2019, Denver could be a sneaky playoff team. Buy that?
Wow. Wow.
It's a bold line.
Wow.
I mean, you look at the division. It's not, you know, I mean, listen, yeah. There's wild card battles. A lot of teams have upgraded. A lot of teams are good. Sneaky, good playoff team if Flacco is competent based on the analysis of the draft class in 2018.
Oh, I believe the Broncos can make the playoff. I wasn't saying the wow for that, Tony.
Here's the deal. I think anybody can make the playoffs because I know I've been doing this league for a long time. I know anybody can make the playoffs at any time. There isn't a team that goes, we give up. I mean, maybe some, but you know, not every team goes, nah, don't come see us for 4 or 5 years. We're going to go do our thing over here.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a 6-10 team with the additions. This is a nice statement.
Yeah. I was saying wow, basically, because it says that Flacco is competent in 2019. You know, I think that we definitely upgraded from the quarterback position of last year. So I think that we're going to be a playoff team or a team that's going to improve record-wise and be at least 9-7 because of the quarterback play and because of these young guys, this rookie class that was graded as what, a B-plus initially, then an A-minus, you know, after seeing what they did this past year. I think they're going to be able to, you know what, too, that I really like about the Broncos, when you had guys out there that might have had some attitude problems that everybody was talking about, let's go get like an A-B. Well, you know what, that was going to be a cancer. The Broncos didn't think twice about that to go get a guy like that, you know what I mean? They went and got a leader at the quarterback position that you don't hear controversy, you don't hear people talking about him, and he wasn't a one-hit wonder. You know, people respect Joe Flacco, people like Joe Flacco, and you know, he's always been doubted, and he's went about his business week in, week out. He hasn't had no meltdowns in the media. He just takes care of business. So they went and got some high-character guys to come and show these rookies, well, now they're going to be in their sophomore season, how to continue to be professionals in this league and try to elevate their game by doing things the right way.
I used your argument yesterday with a friend of mine. I said, just going off on Flacco again, and I said, he's going to throw more touchdowns at Case Keenum, so enough. I don't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah.
I don't, what else do you want? I can't promise anything from Flacco, but I can tell you this, he's going to throw more than Keenum to turn touchdown passes.
Yeah, exactly. And also, he's going to compete a lot harder than Case did on third down. I mean, like I said, I keep on saying, more often than not, I used to watch, we would watch the game in here while we were doing our Facebook Live throughout the season, and me and my co-host, John Davis, we would watch the game, and I'd be like, hey, how much you want to bet that the ball's getting thrown short of the sticks on third down? And we would literally do that week in, week out, and towards the end of the season, we started betting on how much short of the third of the sticks on third down. Is it going to be 2 yards short? Is it going to be 5 yards short? And that's how we went about it, because that's what we expected out of a guy like Case Keenum. At least we know with Joe Flacco, he's going to come in here, he's going to compete on third down, and he's going to be looking to throw the ball at least to the sticks to now get a new set of downs or pass the sticks for a huge play.
Thank God you didn't make it a drinking game.
No, we were working. Couldn't do that. Right.
Register for the Fans 5K Bracket Challenge presented by Breaks Plus. Compete against us. Host your office pool. Also, a chance to win $5,000. Register at 1043thefan.com. That is 1043thefan.com. It is the 5K Bracket Challenge presented by Breaks Plus. Why have the Broncos struggled with arguably the two most important unit positions on the team? We'll discuss that next. Orlando Franklin and Tony D in for Stokely and Zach. All right, Jeff Legwall of ESPN had a good article today discussing the Broncos' struggles with the offensive line and also mirroring that with the struggles at the quarterback position. Because since Peyton left, the offensive line in the unit has been Band-Aid fixes, aging replacements. The quarterback position has been a carousel of miscues. So is it a coincidence, Orlando, that Denver struggles on both of these positions simultaneously over the recent years?
Peyton was a guy that made everybody better. It didn't matter what was going on in other positions, he elevated the play of everybody else because, one, he was Peyton Manning. Everybody wanted to play well because it was Peyton, and everybody knew about the neck injuries that he sustained while being a part of the Indianapolis Colts and not being able to play and sitting out a couple years there because of it and not having the feeling in his hand. So nobody ever wanted to give up that big hit on Peyton. As far as offensive line-wise, nobody ever wanted to give up that big hit where now it's like, is he going to get up from this hit? Am I going to be known as the guy that ended Peyton Manning's career?
Yeah.
You know, so, but he the way he also commanded the team, took control of the offense, it also elevated everybody else because guys didn't have opportunities to get exposed. I'll tell you this. When the Broncos drafted Michael Schofield, and even Matt Paradis, they were smaller guys, right? Now, I looked at them and said, man, there's no way they're going to play on this offensive line because we're a bigger offensive line. We're a power scheme. The following year, the Broncos ended up going to a zone scheme. And that year, you saw the signings of Donald Stevenson. You saw the signings of Evan Mathis, who had led the league the following year, the previous year, in holding calls with the Philadelphia Eagles. Those guys came in and had success because Peyton was a guy to get rid of the ball so quick. You saw Michael Schofield play as an average player when Peyton Manning was in the game. And then Peyton doesn't play against Oakland, and it's Brock Osweiler that starts, and Michael Schofield gives up 5 sacks to Khalil Mack. His play dramatically drops because Peyton's not on the field. Because Peyton was a guy that when he walked on the field, he elevated the play against everybody that was around him, but also he was able to get rid of the ball quick, too, so guys weren't getting exposed out there.
You're touching on it, but I want to kind of expand on that a little bit. So these two units, right, the quarterback and the offensive line, in just in general, how do they impact each other? So you're an offensive lineman. It does depend on who's your quarterback. You talk about getting released the ball. But how do the two work together?
When you got offensive linemen that are somewhat above average or average players, and you got a guy like Peyton Manning, your offensive line is going to look great. I mean, we always looked great when we were here. I mean, Peyton elevated us. I mean, even when there was plays where even if you missed the block, he was able to get rid of the ball and make it and go through his progression fast enough and be able to have that accelerated vision to get the ball out of his hand on a defense where now he was creating explosive plays and having those huge plays. When a guy like Peyton Manning walks out the door now and you have another quarterback like a Paxton Lynch, a Trevor Siemian, these guys that are younger guys that are still developing now, your offensive line has to be a stellar unit. But because Peyton was in the building before, you didn't build it up as a stellar unit. You just built it up as an average unit because you had the quarterback play that was going to, even if the offensive line had struggled, the quarterback play was going to get you through and make you look like an above average team. But when Peyton walked out now, he left with his mind as well. And his ability to read defenses. And now you got put with Paxton Lynch, Trevor Siemian, and these and Brock Osweiler came back. And now these guys that process information a little bit slower and do not know where to go with the ball right away with when it's a hot, do not understand defenses 100%, and do not know how to look out to the receiver and signal a different play. So now it really exposed that offensive line. And when your offensive line got exposed, your quarterback also got exposed because he couldn't get the ball out of his hands as well.
Look, nobody wants to commit penalties, but I want to ask this from a standpoint of an offensive lineman. Isn't there a difference from a Peyton Manning stare when a play gets called back than somebody else like a Paxton Lynch or Trevor Siemian?
Oh, absolutely. You know? But it's
if
not
Peyton completes a 25-yard completion and then it gets called back for holding, I think there's a different look in the huddle from your quarterback.
Oh, and he's telling you about it. It's not just a look. I mean, he's speaking his mind. I'll tell you, we played against Houston. I think it might have been in 2013. Yeah, it was 2013, the game that Julius broke the record and got the touchdown record. Before that, there was a play that I had got a holding call. And then 2 plays later, I false started on the same drive. And Peyton ripped me just on the field. Didn't wait. Like, we still had the ball. We were still going to go and be able to try to get out of the hole. But Peyton literally got on me and ripped me in front of everybody, not in the huddle. Like, come on, oh, like, what are you doing? Like, get your head in the game. Like just flat out ripped me to the point where I was playing against one of my former teammates, Daryl Sharpton, that played middle linebacker for the Texans, and he mimicked Peyton, and I couldn't do anything to Peyton when he said it, but I had some words for Daryl Sharpton by just repeating the words that Peyton said to me. So it's definitely different when a guy like Peyton rips you and a guy like Peyton stares at you for messing up a play as opposed to a guy like Paxton Lynch or Brock Osweiler. I remember when Brock was here, you know, nothing against him, but he would come into games for backup time. And as soon as he walked in the huddle, there would be guys in the huddle saying, hey, okay, Brock, like, just get the ball out of your hands. Don't sit back there and be hanging out with the ball. Everything's a timing thing. Like, this is what offensive linemen are saying to Brock when he gets in the game. Because the drop-off is so drastic from when Peyton's in the game because everything's timing. You know, when Peyton's in the game, it's 2.5 seconds, 3 seconds max that he's holding on to the ball. And there's going to be some plays that are going to be a little bit longer, but he's going to come in the huddle. He's going to say, all right, man, this one's going to be a little bit longer. You guys need to hold up. I'm taking a shot. You know, and he's just going to be able to inform you and tell you exactly what's going on. Where with these younger quarterbacks, the Paxton Lynches, the Brock Osweilers, the Trevor Siemian, they don't really know how to read defenses in order to tell the offensive line any kind of that information. And also with the offensive line, how it structures now, what you're told, as a tackle, you're told to run those defensive ends up the field. You want to run them about 7 yards past in the backfield, because in every play, the quarterback is supposed to drop back at the most. You know, sometimes there's three-step drops, sometimes there's five-step drops when he's sitting there, but at the most, the quarterback is supposed to be sitting at 5.5 yards in the backfield. So as tackles, if you run them by 7 yards, you're good. As offensive guards and center now, you got to keep that pocket flat so that quarterback can now drop back to 7 yards but take 2 steps up and be at 5 yards now to let the ball rip. With Peyton Manning, that's how it always went. Now, with Brock Osweiler, it went a little bit different. You never really knew where he was going to be. And that's the difference between the type of quarterbacks.
In terms of a young quarterback coming in and kind of doing what Peyton Manning was doing, like getting on anybody on the offensive line, do you guys on the offensive line have more respect when a younger guy does it, or does he have to earn that? How do you guys handle that when a young guy is taking that sort of role as at the quarterback position?
Hey, as long as you're throwing the ball and you're competing out there, I'm all for it.
And so it doesn't matter experience-wise. If he's coming out and he's, hey, guys, this, even if he's doing it in his game two or three, because Manning obviously is a different breed.
But you got to remember, I played with Tim Tebow, second year, you know, his second year in the league, when all the Tebow magic, and we all believed in him. He wasn't that great at throwing the ball, but he gave us a chance at running the ball. And we knew that, and we knew we were going to run to get the ball more often than not. So when Tim Tebow told us, hey, and got on us that this is what's going on, we got to do this, we all were for it because he gave us a chance to win the game. Now, if you're going out there and you're throwing interceptions and you're fumbling the ball, you're not making the right reads, now guys are going to look at you kind of crazy when you try to come in that huddle and say, let's go, I got it, this, and that. Guys are going to be like, or trying to get on you, guys are going to look at you and say, you need to handle your own business before you tell me anything.
Right.
But a guy, young guys, like Tim Tebow was young. You know, we had Ryan Clady in that huddle. We had Zane Beatles, J.D. Walton, Chris Cooper. And then I was at the right tackle. We all listened because we believed in him, and he was going to go out there and take care of business. So if you're not taking care of business and you're young and you're trying to blab off out the mouth, that's when, you know, the vets are like, hold on, relax, slow your roll. But if you're taking care of business, guys are going to rally around you. You don't look at last year with the Browns. Look at Baker Mayfield, number one overall pick. You don't think those guys rallied around him immediately? As soon as he started, and when Tyrod Taylor went down and Baker came back in that game and they won that football game, guys rallied around him immediately because they said, oh, man, this young guy, he knows his football, but also he gives us a better opportunity to win, and he's going to make the decisions that we need him to make.
Tebow didn't use any curse words, did he? I mean, in that huddle.
No curse words. No curse words.
I was always wondering. I'm trying to dig up anything, and I can't find anything on him. So I'm just gonna give up.
Yeah.
So from the standpoint of like when you guys on the offense, do you ever say to a quarterback, "Hey, if you get rid of the ball quicker, you wouldn't have gotten sacked." Don't blame me.
not a quarterback. No. I mean, with Tebow, we've said that. Because there was games that were giving up 15-yard sacks. And in the New England game, I think we gave up the New England playoff game in early January 2012. We gave up there was a 24-yard sack in that game. And it's just like, what are you doing, dude? Just throw the ball out of bounds. You know, even if you take the penalty, just literally throw the ball out of bounds. Do not take a sack and continue to go backwards. But the other quarterbacks that I've played in with my career, it's a little bit different. You know, I'm not going to say that to Peyton Manning. I wasn't going to say that to Kyle Orton. I wasn't going to say that to Phillip Rivers. And I've never seen guys say those type of things to those type of quarterbacks because, you know, I mean, you get the feel of guys that really understand it. And when a quarterback does mess up and that really understands this game, you could tell that it hurts them. Look at this past year when the Broncos played against the Chargers, and Phillip Rivers, you know, he throws the ball in the dirt instead of taking the sack right there in the fourth quarter to run the clock. You know, immediately he's kicking himself. He's like, oh man, like he knows that he messed up. Where sometimes you got some other young quarterbacks that they'll mess up and they'll just start jogging off the field, and their body language suggests that they probably don't even know what they just did.
Do you think that the quarterback issue would be? Oh, so glaring. I mean, it would be so glaring if the offensive line had played well post Peyton Manning. Would we be noticing everything that we notice?
Oh, if the offensive line was set and this unit was good to go since Peyton Manning, no, it wouldn't have been glaring. Absolutely not. But look, how was it set? I mean, let's talk about it real quick,
yeah,
Tony.
Sure.
Since the Peyton Manning era, I mean, you start the season off that season where Ryan Harris is supposed to be the right tackle. And then you got Tyson Burrow as well. And then Ryan Clady is supposed to be the left tackle. Ryan Clady goes down. Tyson Burrow goes to the left. Then they flip in the middle of the season and move Ryan Harris to the left tackle position and then tied to the right tackle position. Then in the playoffs now, at the end, the last game of the season, they take Ty out from right tackle. They start starting Tyler Palumbus on the inside of that year in the Peyton Manning era. You're rotating three guards. Two of the guards are not here the next year. It was turmoil. It was not only did Peyton Manning walk out the door, four offensive linemen that were playing or starting in that Super Bowl walked out the door with him.
Right,
Luis Vasquez. Tyler Palumbus, Evan Mathis at the left guard position, Ryan Harris at the left tackle position. So that's what people don't really realize. Like, not only did Peyton Manning walk out the door, you had four offensive linemen that started in that Super Bowl that also walked out the door too, the same exact year.
So we know that in the NFL, offensive lines shuffle all the time. I mean, there's really not a consistent – you don't have teams that stay consistent. There's always injuries. There's always guys moving positions. But we all know this has been very extreme. This has been very
exactly, –
this is different.
Exactly.
This is on another level of shaking up the offensive line.
Because that doesn't happen.
Right.
You have five starters in 1 year, and then the next year you basically only return one that started in the Super Bowl. That doesn't happen. But that's what happened for the Broncos. I mean, Ryan Harris was on a one-year contract. Tyler Palumbus was on a one-year contract. Evan Mathis was on a one-year contract. Luis Vasquez had another year on his contract, but the Broncos decided to release him. The only person that you retained for the 2016 season when you went 9-7 was Matt Paradis.
Yeah.
And you just let him walk out the door.
Just let him walk down, right. I mean, think about how imperative it is to get this position right. You talked about this the other day, which was, look, you'd get two coaches to interview for the head coaching position. One of them is an offensive line coach, one of the better offensive line coaches in the sport, and you convince him not to be the head coach, but to come and be the offensive line coach for you.
Yeah. That was huge.
I mean, gigantic. I mean, he doesn't stay at his job. Obviously, he's got some family in Denver, and it's a good move to come to Denver personally.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't want to live here? I mean,
right,
if you love the Four Seasons, this is where it's at. And Mike Munchak is leaving out of Pittsburgh. I mean, obviously, Denver's a better place to be. If you love the Four Seasons, it's where it's at. But that's unheard of to go and start a head coaching search, to pinpoint your two finalists, and to get both of them. That is unheard of.
Yeah, exactly. To say to a guy, look, we're not going to give you the job you're interviewing for, but we'd like you to have the same job here that you have before. And by the way, we're building and reshaping the entire offensive line, but it's yours. You can take, and he took it.
Yeah,
Chris Cooper coming back.
Yeah, that was a huge step for the Denver Broncos, and I love what they did with Chris Cooper. You brought in a guy that you drafted, you developed, and now you brought him in to coach. But what the Broncos did was they created that security just in case, you know, there is another team that comes knocking for Mike Munchak in a year or 2 years. You know, now you got a guy that's trying to catch on and catch that traction and become the head, the offensive line coach for the first time instead of an assistant coach that could sit there and really learn from a guy like Mike Munchak.
So on the flip side of what we were talking about before, if you had the offensive line that was good, would it help the quarterback situation? If the quarterback situation was good, how would it affect the offensive line?
Oh, it benefits the offensive line tremendously. I mean, you got a great quarterback in there that really understands defenses, like a Peyton Manning, like a Phillip Rivers, like a Drew Brees, like a Tom Brady. I mean, they come out there and they absolutely ball. Let's talk about real quick Trent Brown's situation. This guy just got basically ran out of the San Francisco 49ers a year ago, was traded to the New England Patriots. Was brought in to be their swing tackle. That's why they traded for them, because New England drafted the Wynn kid out of Georgia. And they had Marcus Cannon that's making about $7.5 million a year playing that right tackle position, so they weren't going to put him on the bench. Now Trent Brown goes in and has to start all 16 games because the Wynn guy gets hurt. They drafted out of Georgia in the first round. Trent Brown now, he looks extremely better than what he looked like when playing for San Fran, the team that drafted him for the first couple years of his career. And now he hits free agency and he just gets paid. When the quarterback plays better, it it just elevates the play of the offensive line, and they just all get paid. I mean, it's happened with Peyton Manning and the offensive lines that he has had in the past, where they haven't had to spend a ton of money on offensive linemen to bring him in, but also whenever the offensive linemen that the new one that the Indianapolis Colts have drafted have hit free agency, they have got about a 5% increase from what other teams' offensive linemen that went to free agency had got. And that was because they played in front of Peyton Manning. So now we just saw that happen. Now you fast forward, and we just saw that happen in 2019 with Trent Brown. He gets overpaid. He gets more money because he was just blocking for Tom Brady. Do you think Trent Brown is going to play like he did last year?
Right.
Up to that contract? No, he's not. Because Derek Carr is not the quarterback that Tom Brady is.
From a standpoint of what Mike Munchak has, I mean, what is his biggest challenge on this offensive line, getting it to where it needs to be? What's his biggest, whether it's disciplining Bowles, whether it's Connor McGovern playing center?
It's going to be two positions, literally two positions.
Right tackle.
Not right tackle. I'm going to say, what are you going to do with Garrett Bowles, your left tackle? The Broncos drafted him 2 years ago in the first round. How can you get him to become a franchise left tackle and make the decision that the Broncos made 2 years ago before Mike Munchak got here a right decision? How could you make it now where now it's justified why the Broncos picked Garrett Bowles in the first round? Because right now we're looking like, man, what are we doing? Like, what did we really do with this pick right now? Did we really use a first-round pick for a guy like this? That's what we're saying. And it's also going to take the other position is center. What is he going to do with the center position? Because Matt Paradis just walked out the door, and Connor McGovern struggled the last four games of the season. So what are you going to do with center? How do you fix that position? If he fixed those two positions this year, right now, I mean, guys are going to be like, man, okay, yeah, we made the right decision. We definitely made the right decision by bringing Mike Munchak in here. He's getting us going in the right direction. But it's going to take your left tackle, who's the blind side of the quarterback and protects that quarterback, and also your center, who's now your quarterback of your offensive line and puts all five guys on the same page each and every play.
What do you guys on the offensive line, what have you guys know about like a Dante Scarnecchia or a Mike Munchak that's different than other offensive line coaches?
I love Scar out there in New England. I mean, I interviewed with New England coming in, and I love the fact that he cross-trains his offensive linemen. So if you're the right tackle, you got to know what not only the right tackle does, but the right guard, the center, the left guard, and the left tackle. You know, I've always thought that benefits the offensive linemen to know what all five guys does, because now you know you could see the whole play and understand the responsibilities that each and every guy has on that. And it demands a lot, and it takes a little bit longer to learn a playbook doing it that way, but now you kind of know, now you definitely know how to block every situation, every front. And you know, in the league, we see it constantly. Defenses are shifting, when the offense is cross motion and you got the corners running, and then all of a sudden safety drops down in the box. And when you're able to understand the big picture for the offensive line, now you're really playing fast and you can really hone in on your technique. So I love that Scar does that out there with the Patriots, but I also love the fact that Mike Munchak, what Mike Munchak brings to the table is he's huge on the gap scheme. I know the Broncos are not doing the gap scheme now, but you look at guys like Ramon Foster before a guy like Mike Munchak got there, you thought Ramon Foster was getting ready to get kicked out of the league. You thought he couldn't move anymore. You know, this is a guy that 90% of the time he's in a two-point stance because he just looks like he's uncomfortable with putting his hands down and bending and getting in a three-point stance. But Mike Munchak was able to get there and have him playing at a high level. And he's a technician at the end of the day, because you saw him with Villanueva, the left tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers. That was a tight end originally. He played tight end in college. You know, Mike Munchak is able to turn him into an all-pro left tackle. So that right there tells me that Mike Munchak's a guy that hones in on technique and is able to get guys going in the right direction immediately because of it.
Orlando, is there something about Flacco, the way he plays, whether it can be anything? It could be any aspect of his game that could lead to the betterment of the offensive line?
He competes. He competes on third down. I mean, he's a guy that completely understands defense. So that's going to better the offensive line, because now he's going to be able to be a film junkie. When I look at Flacco and watch him play, he reminds me of Peyton, just always understanding where the blitz is coming from and how he needs to get rid of the ball. I mean, and that's huge. I mean, that pre-snap read and being able to get your offensive line figured out and being able to slide those guys into the blitz so there's hardly ever any free runners. Now there's no guessing for the offensive line. They could literally listen to the quarterback. He's going to point the mic, and now you just got to understand your rules. Whether you have the mic linebacker or you're sliding away from the mic linebacker, you're going to almost 9 times out of 10 be basically right in sliding into the blitz, and now there's no free runners. When there's no free runners in a game, Tony, it makes the offensive line look like they played phenomenal. When you're able to slide into the blitz every time and you know where it's coming from, the offensive line looks like they played an amazing game. And Joe Flacco's game dictates that. It says in the past that he understands the defenses enough where he's going to be able to put that offensive line in the right direction to pick up that blitz.
That's good stuff. It's a Bud Light Fast Break Wednesday. Enjoy the first and second round tournament action responsibly this week. Bud Light, game day's favorite light lager. The Drive is coming up next.